Hey, everyone, and welcome to Movie Crush. Charles W. Chuck Bryant here in New York City and not Pont City Market, Atlanta, Georgia. I'm at CDM Studios in New York, which, by the way, thanks to you guys. They always take great care of me here in New York City. It's our partner studio. And this is number 2 of 5 for the New York sessions. The wonderful, lovely, talented Brooke Adams, wife of Tony Shalhoub, who I had just before her. They were kind enough to both book interviews with me, thanks to my good friend Jim. And it worked out great. And Brooke is just so wonderful and charming. And she indulged me quite a bit because Days of Heaven, her movie from 1978 with the great Terrence Malick movie with Sam Shepard and Richard Gere, is one of my favorite all-time movies. And I knew if I ever got a chance to talk to Brooke that I would pepper her with questions. And she was kind enough to indulge that. And then after the interview, I realized I didn't even talk to her about The Dead Zone or Invasion of the Body Snatchers from 1978 and 1983, two of the great, great movies as well, but maybe another day. But Brooke was wonderful, and her pick was Waiting for Guffman, which I was really excited to talk about because it's one of my favorite all-time comedies for sure. And I was gave me the opportunity to watch it again for I don't even know how many times I've seen that movie, but many, many times, but I always find something new in it. So that was her pick for reasons that you will see growing up in community theater. So it hit very close to her heart, which was kind of a fun angle on that one. So here we go with Brooke Adams on Waiting for Guffman.
Theatrical, crazy people. And I want to be a theatrical, crazy person on my own.
Where was that? Where did you
grow
up?
New York City.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I always love talking to native New Yorkers.
Yeah.
And so you, where'd you, what part of New York?
The Upper East Side. We lived in a brownstone on 89th between York and East End.
Wow.
So we went to Carl Schurz Park, you know, where the mayor's house is. And we went to school at the Church of the Heavenly Rest Day School, which is also right up, it's on 5th and 90th, where our daughter just got married.
Oh, wow.
And then we went to Dalton. And then we kept running in, just in front of the people we owed the money to.
Right.
For these expensive schools.
Right. So we, one step ahead of the
creditor. I ended
up
in public high school, the High School of Performing Arts, in the dance department.
Oh, and is that the FAME school?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
It was neat.
What was that like?
Just like the movie.
Really?
Well, we dance in the lunchroom. I mean, it was really, it was fun. It was a fun place.
Boy, that's amazing. Was your family in entertainment at all or interested in that?
Oh, yeah. Both of them. My father was a producer. He had a summer theater every year when I was growing up. And then later he started doing children's theater in and around New York. He had a company called the Part Foundation, which I guess was performing art repertory theater or something, but it was a, it's still going actually now. It's called Theater Works. And it's children's theater, mostly about preludes to greatness, about famous people like young Abe Lincoln.
You know? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
What a cool legacy too. So was there any ever doubt for you of what you were going to do?
Well, there could have been doubt, but there was certainly no planning. I never went to college. My parents didn't even seem to think it was something we should consider. I never even took an SAT. It was just like, oh, well, we're going to be actors, so we'll just...
Yeah, that would just waste
4 years.
Move
right away into waitressing tables.
Wow. So did you grow up going to movies in New York? And Where...
86th Street in Lexington. There used to be a big RKO cinema there. I think that's where I saw my first movie, The Ten Commandments.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
At what age? That's kind of a heavy one.
Yeah, I know.
For
and
a kid.
It wasn't like we were religious or anything. It was, I think a friend of my parents took me. I was about 7.
Right. Wow. Yeah. And you sat through it.
Yeah.
Kudos for that. Well, since I have you, I cannot help but talk a little bit about one of my probably top three movies of all time, Days of Heaven. It is, and I was at Jim Ice's wedding.
Oh.
And my wife made me promise not to assault you and pepper you with questions. And so I didn't then, but now this seems like the right venue. just one of the best, one of my favorite movies ever. One of the best movies ever made, in my opinion. And I do have a few specific questions, if you'll indulge me.
Sure.
And they're kind of just nerdy production questions in one way.
Sure.
But the whole movie looks like it was shot between the hours of 6:30 and 8 p.m.
It was.
You know, that magic hour, of course.
Yep.
Was that?
Yeah, we waited for magic hour every day pretty much.
Really?
Yeah. We wouldn't wait for anything else. Like if it was snowing and it was supposed to be August, which it was, we'd shoot anyway. Love the snow, you know. But
made for a long shoot probably, huh?
You know, we did a lot of reshooting later. The actual shoot wasn't all that long. I have a bad sense of time, so I couldn't tell you how long exactly. But it wasn't, you know, there was so little dialogue.
Right.
And there was, it was just, it was really about the visuals. And we
that
had
great narration, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Which we did much later.
Mm-hmm.
Literally at Terry Malick's house with Linda sitting underneath a blanket.
Wow.
He said, just tell me what you think the story was about.
Really?
Yeah.
So was that improvised or?
Kind of. I mean, Terry is a great writer and he wrote a beautiful script. The original script, it was like a Thomas Hardy novel.
Right.
And every time we opened up our mouths in the rehearsal room, he'd say, oh, no, don't say that. Oh, no, don't say that, which didn't give us all a lot of confidence. But anyway, that's when it became a very visual, not very verbal movie.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And so, yeah, he just, he loved that sort of authentic, off kilter kind of, you know, nothing too literary and nothing too on the nose. So it was always, he'd say, you know, just go,
or,
yeah.
Well,
or just, or don't even make the sound, just do this with your chin.
Right.
You know.
Well, there's so much in the faces, and it's. I think that's a quality that you don't see a ton anymore, which is to let a movie take its time, to not spell it all out. The way the story unfolds in Days of Heaven is just so languid and just such a beautiful movie. What was the casting process like for that?
Oh, it was endless. I auditioned, I don't know, maybe 10 times.
Wow, really?
First time I auditioned, I was put on film by the casting director, Gino. I know his name, but I've forgotten it at the moment. And he didn't like me, and he wasn't going to show Terry. But we were, they were sitting there looking at some of the other people, and he sort of sped past me, and Terry said, wait, who is that? So that's how I even was considered.
Now, was this your first big movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it became audition after audition because it was going to be John Travolta was going to do the Richard Gere role.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
And so he would pair me up with John and then he'd pair me up with Richard and then just tons of auditions. And I became completely superstitious and thought I have to wear this ring if I'm going to get the, you know, it was just madness. And then I didn't get it.
Oh, wow.
And he hired Genevieve Bujold to do the role.
I don't think I know who that is.
French actress.
Okay.
You might ask, you're, with a French accent, which made the story a little more complicated.
Sure.
How are they going to pretend to be brother and sister?
Right,
and
right.
All that.
Uh-huh.
But actually, Genevieve Bujold and I look a little bit alike. So he hired her, and he and Richard and she, and we also lost John Travolta because they wouldn't let him out of Welcome Back, Kotter.
That's something.
And so, you know, I'm sure John wasn't very happy about that.
No, but Richard Gere was so great in it.
Yeah. And John would have been great, too. I mean, he has a kind of, anyway. But Richard was fantastic. And so he hired this woman, and they went out to the beach. And the next thing I knew was he fired her.
Oh, wow.
she had been, I don't know the story, I shouldn't say this on the air, but apparently they didn't get along.
Gotcha.
And so he called me in.
Wow. Serendipity, huh?
Yeah, serendipity and, you know, getting the leftovers.
Mm-hmm. Well, shoot.
But thank goodness I did. Yeah, I was so happy to do it. I knew when I was auditioning for it that this was going to be a classic.
That's what I was going to ask.
I just somehow
knew. Yeah, because Terrence Malick certainly at the time had done Badlands, but he hadn't garnered that reputation yet. He was still young in his career.
Yeah.
So it's not like you knew you were walking into a masterclass.
No, but I somehow knew it. I maybe it was the fact that Terry was so hush-hush about, you know, you weren't allowed to say the name.
Oh, really?
Which was fine because I could never remember the name after the audition. I'd say, oh, it has a heaven in it, but I don't remember. Yeah, he was very much the auteur with a secret, and maybe that's what made me know it was going to be a big hit. I don't know. I just thought this is, oh, and I just wanted to be in those 1910 clothes.
Right. And well, the look was just amazing.
And, yeah.
And that was another kind of nerdy question is, just the equipment in the movie, the farming equipment.
Yeah.
How are they doing that? Because it was so authentic. Like, were these real machines that ran?
Yeah. Yeah, they were. And we were also working in Alberta, Canada, where those were all Hutterites. A lot of them did not even have to get into costume, and they looked perfectly okay. They were all farmers of that. It was the last hay that was going to be brought in because the movie had been pushed back and pushed back. So we had to shoot it there, and they were all there, and I think maybe some of those machines were theirs.
Right.
Because they lived a very simple, you know, Hutterites are like Mormons, or not Mormons, but, you know, Quakers, that whole thing.
Right.
And so they were in the film, and their equipment was too.
Huh. Well, that explains it. After all these years, I probably could look that up, but this is much better to find out from your mouth.
Well, I could be wrong, too. Just a warning.
No,
I mean,
I
can tell you that they were authentically there, but I don't know whether they had to get the props from some prop house in L.A. It's possible.
Right. And the whole thing was shot in Canada?
Yeah.
Now, did they build that house?
Yes.
Wow.
Jack Fisk.
Oh, right. Great. Yeah, that's right. They worked together on
many
pretty much
times.
Everything, right?
They did. Yep.
Uh-huh.
Badlands was such a great movie.
Right, which is where he met his wife, I think, right?
Well, then his wife. You mean Jack.
Yeah.
Jack and
Sissy's
Sissy.
Basic. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched that one not too long ago because the guests dropped out, but their pick was Badlands. And I've seen all those movies, Days of Heaven and Badlands, so many times. But I can't believe they built that house. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was so beautiful.
Yeah, and just out there, I mean, the whole – it was so striking that that house just out in the middle of nowhere. And Sam Shepard is this kind of visionary – you know, you could tell one day it would be this great estate.
Right.
But it was just so new.
Yeah.
Out there in the middle of nowhere in a field. It was just so crazy looking.
With the couch in the field.
Yeah. It was just so neat.
Yeah.
Oh, one of my favorite movies. And what was Terrence Malick like back then?
Well, he was fun. He was very funny, but he was also kind of a taskmaster. He didn't have the greatest way with actors.
Okay. I think I've heard that.
I mean, I loved him. We all really loved him. We all got along and we laughed a lot. But he didn't know how to communicate what he needed to actors. So what he would do is, these are the things I remember specifically. He told Richard that he didn't believe anything he was saying.
Oh, wow.
He told me that I should just do whatever he says and don't ask any questions. Mm-hmm. He told Sam, he said, you promised you would be good in this movie. It was all of our first movies.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And he told Linda that if she didn't do it right, he'd shoot her.
Oh, my God.
I mean, with a sense of humor.
Yeah.
But
intimidating.
But
though,
he was serious. Uh-huh. And we were all incredibly uptight as a result.
Right.
And maybe that works for the movie. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess that was everyone's kind of one of their first films, if not their first, right?
Yeah.
That's an interesting approach to casting.
Yeah. I think he didn't want, you know, people that were recognizable.
It sounds like it, yeah.
And, of course, by the time it came out, Richard was already recognizable from Goodbye, Mr. Good, Looking for Mr. Goodbar.
Right, and, yeah.
Yeah.
And Linda Mann, was that her name?
Yeah. Oh,
she was just so wonderful.
Yeah.
That voice and that narration just makes that, puts that movie over the top.
Yeah.
So great. Do you keep up with any of them? Or?
Not really, really, no. I was heartbroken when Sam died.
Yeah.
But I hadn't seen him in years. And right. Richard, too, I haven't seen.
I think as film fans, we all want to think that you all, you know, are pen pals and have lunch together once a year. But I understand the reality of it.
And then maybe other type of actors would be doing that. I'm not very good at following through on.
Oh, really?
Not really, no.
All right, well, we can go ahead and get into Waiting for Guffman.
Okay.
Which I watched on the plane for the probably 30th time.
Uh-huh.
No matter how many times I've seen a movie, I always try to watch it right before we do these interviews.
Yeah, I watched it too.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that always helps.
Yeah.
I appreciate you doing that. I remember my first experience seeing this. I was actually living up here, and I saw it at the Angelica.
Uh-huh.
And it was a big kick for me because Susan Sarandon and Tim Robbins sat right behind me.
Uh-huh.
And that was just always – I was much younger then and was in my 20s, and seeing movie stars out for one of the first times in New York was kind of cool.
Right.
And it was just such a funny movie.
What
do you remember your first experience with it when you saw it for the first time?
I think I saw it in a movie theater in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe my sister was with me, and she and I both grew up in this theatrical world that is what this movie just gets so brilliantly. And we just howled.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had that experience, and then I go back to look again, and it's just not funny. And this one, when I saw it again, I thought, oh, it still makes me laugh so hard.
It is so, so funny.
So funny. I mean, and for me personally, it is my life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what is
I have to write
down names because I'm terrible with names. But, oh, Louis Arquette.
Uh-huh.
He does the intro to the play that they're
doing. Yeah, Mr. Woolley.
Yeah.
He's the narrator of the play.
The narrator. Uh-huh. And that part so took me back to my father's children's theater.
Oh.
I mean, it was really, it sounded just like the narrator of any one of those plays.
Mm-hmm.
So funny. And heartbreaking. The whole thing breaks my heart.
Right. Well, there's an earnestness to it that I think I've seen in interviews where Christopher Guest talked about his inspiration for this was seeing his kids in a play that was not very good, but how earnest everyone was and how hard they were trying and how they thought they were great.
Uh-huh.
And he just thought that that was a pretty rich world to create one of his
documentaries. It is. And as I said, we grew up in summer theater, so we were doing week stock of musicals, which is mayhem. I mean, it was just like this.
Right.
You're pulling together this thing in 7 days, and then once you open, you're rehearsing the other one, and then it comes in. You know, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was exactly like this movie. So earnest. And so my sister still says, I think they were as good as any Broadway show you could see. But
right.
I can't imagine that that's true.
Well, it has such it's one of my favorite things in movies or comedies like this is when they're not afraid to be silly and to make what I call dumb jokes. But I say that with endearingly.
Yeah.
Sometimes a dumb joke can just be the perfect thing.
Yeah.
And it really starts off in that very first scene when they're looking at the miniature of the town, planning out the porta potties. And the guy makes the joke about having snipers on the roof, which is such a silly notion to have. He's, we can put a gun here. We can put a gun here.
Oh,
and it's
I
just,
know.
It just hilarious. Hits that tone right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Which is so wonderful.
And when, Christopher Guest as what's his name?
Corky St. Clair.
The Corky, of course, goes to ask them for the money.
Right.
That scene is just the funniest
thing. Yeah,
where he says,
100 grand.
100,000. They say, we have 15,000 for the whole year.
Right. And that includes swimming, which was such a funny addition on that line.
Yeah.
And then the Blaine was the, another dumb joke, which is so great, was the stool capital. That play on words, it was just so silly and fun. The stool boom, or the production, the stage production of Backdraft. Just all these kind of silly things that they were doing.
So funny.
It's great. So in the cast, of course, the great Fred Willard and Catherine O'Hara as the Lunts.
Catherine,
Who's it? Sheila and Ron and Sheila.
Right. I mean, we had always a couple in the summer theater with my father.
I was going to ask about that.
Always.
I'm sure.
An odd, very odd couple. I remember one couple that had like a toy that they used as their baby that they would talk to, and they'd invite the cast over. We could meet this doll.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. And they'd been doing this, you know, these are people who travel from show to show and probably are not much better than.
Right.
But that scene where Catherine O'Hara is drunk at the dinner table is the funniest drunk scene I have ever seen. She's brilliant.
Right. And, of course, the another silly reveal of the penis reduction surgery that Ron got. The great Eugene Levy in this movie is so wonderful as the dentist.
So funny. And wrote it with Christopher Gett.
All right. I thought that was the case.
Yeah.
And, of course, these movies are improvised, so they write these robust outlines for the movie.
Oh, is that right? There aren't lines? They don't write lines?
Right. This and Best in Show, which I don't know if you've seen Best in Show.
I feel like
these are like a 1-2 punch.
Yeah. But this one, for me, I guess because I'm so into theater and community theater and that kind of thing, this one for me is just, it's the best.
Really hits home.
Yeah, you know, when I was trying to think of what's my favorite movie, it's a very hard thing to think about. I started looking at lots of movies that I thought, oh, I remember that was great.
It's an unfair question.
Yeah. So let's not say it's my favorite movie of all movies.
Right. But, that's sort of impossible.
But I did look up, I did watch Rosemary's Baby, which I remembered.
Oh, wow.
That's a great movie.
Uh-huh.
But I realized that what enthralls me the most in that movie is this part that John Cassavetes plays where he's an actor who's willing to let the devil fuck his wife for a job, for a part. So again, it's the same world that I know so well.
That's funny. That's the opposite of Waiting for Guffman.
Yeah.
As far as the pick goes. So Eugene Levy is the dentist. He's just so great. And apparently Christopher Guest could not even be on screen when he did his eye gag, when he would take off his glasses and cross his eye. It would break him up every time. Uh-huh. And they all told stories about various scenes that they – and because it's improv, they don't want to break a scene if they have something good going. So Eugene Levy or Christopher Guest would just kind of slink off camera and disappear and laugh around the corner just to kind of keep the scene going, which is great. And Parker Posey.
Oh, she's wonderful in it.
She's so great in everything, but especially as Libby May, the Dairy Queen worker.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Such a great character.
So great.
So the audition scenes, one of the best parts, and I'm sure you were familiar with kind of this community theater audition process.
Yeah.
Did it smack of reality?
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
It's all – that's what's funny about it is that there's nothing that's really – that unreal at all. The audition process. At my father's summer theater, we used to have the auditions in our bedroom, my sister's and mine, because that's where the piano was.
Oh,
wow. Those were all musicals. So we would be awakened, if that's the way to say it, you know, at like on a Saturday when we were trying to sleep in by Oklahoma right in our bedroom. Sit up and have to kind of go out of the room with drool on our faces past all the actors who were waiting in the hall.
Right.
Yeah.
Nervously waiting to get to the bathroom.
Yeah.
That's so funny. And apparently for this, they would decide on the song because they needed to have the piano accompaniment. But Christopher Guest said he didn't even want to know what they were going to do for the audition.
Uh-huh.
Like he knew what the song would be, but not how they would play it.
Oh, yeah.
So they just got
to. They must have had such a good time making that.
And Parker Posey with Teacher's Pet.
Oh, yes.
And that little dance she does is just so wonderful. And the shtick of Ron and Sheila together with their matching tracksuits.
Yeah, yeah.
It is. It was really something else.
Yeah, they're great.
One of my favorite lines in that audition scene was after Ron and Sheila audition, he asks if he wants to, Fred Willard's asked if he wants to move the stool. He said, "You want me to strike it?" He said, "You know, we worked with Corky. We know some of the terms coming in. Strike the stool."
And Bob Balaban, what a great, hilarious character that is. The resentful musical director who wants to direct it.
Yeah.
Thinks he gets his moment, and then it's even more humiliating because everybody in the company goes out to find Corky and bring him back. Love that.
Yeah, because he kind of makes his role clear early on when he says that every year up until now, he had always done it himself.
Right.
But now Corky, of course, is a professional from New York City. So he has this expertise that he really doesn't have. There are so many lines from this movie that my wife and I still kind of incorporate into our daily life. And one of them is the great Corky line, "I'm going to go home and bite my pillow." We still say that to each other when one of us is like joking around about being upset. It's pretty funny. Eventually, they move on to the show itself, which is the last act of the movie. And they had a real choreographer and I think had a week to rehearse, which he said he wanted it to be short so it would be realistic as sort of half knowing the dance moves. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have to fake half knowing the dance moves.
Right, right.
But they had to learn it a little bit.
Yeah.
To actually get up there and perform Red, White, and Blaine.
Oh, right. Right.
And it just seems so real. I think that's the only way this movie works.
It does. That's absolutely it. There's never, I mean, you know they know some of it's funny, but they never act like they do.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the key, I think.
Absolutely.
For a lot of comedy.
Absolutely.
Because there's not a nudge and a wink to it.
Yeah.
And I know Christopher Guest in all those mockumentaries he's done wants to play it very straight.
Yeah.
That these are real people. I know he's always said these are people that exist in the world.
Yeah.
I'm not making fun of them. I think it's sort of a love letter to these people in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think so too.
This is
interesting. If you've grown up in the theater, it is a love thing. I mean, it's probably why I don't stay connected to all the people that I do movies with is because I would make these families every summer from when I was 6 years old on and then never see them again until now. Now I run into people that were at my father's theater.
Oh, really?
That's fun, yeah.
Oh, that's fun. And they come up to you?
Or I recognize them.
Oh, really?
You know, and now we're the same age.
Mm-hmm.
I was six at the time and they were adults and now we're the same.
I know that trick.
Yeah, and they're also my same height. They were much taller before, but they've shrunk and I've grown.
And right, and you all catch up to one another.
Yeah.
That's funny. So it's sort of an editing masterpiece, I think, when you I think they ended up having, I have a little trivia bit in here, 58 hours of footage.
Wow.
Yeah, 58 hours that he had to whittle down to a very lean 90 minutes or so. And at one point, he had cut himself out of the movie entirely as Corky.
Wow.
And Eugene Levy came in and said, you know, what are you doing? You know how if you get in that editing room, you can sort of lose yourself and not know which way is up at one point. And I think it took a third eye coming in and saying, you have to be in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I can't even imagine how they would do it without Corky.
No. He's one of the beloved characters now. I've heard Christopher Guest is very serious in real life, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Do you know him at all?
No. Oh. I've met Jamie and I maybe have met him, but no, I don't.
I think that's true of some comedians.
Most are such tragic characters.
Yeah, you have the sense that they're just always laughing and funny, but he apparently is a very serious guy.
Yeah.
Takes his comedy very seriously.
Yeah.
And, of course, he wrote the songs with his Spinal Tap cohorts, Michael McKean and Harry Shearer.
Yeah.
When it came time to write the musical, they had to take it seriously.
Right.
And even though it's an improvised movie, I think the only thing that was written out ahead of time were the songs from the musical.
Right.
So Nothing Ever Happens on Mars, and just all these great, great songs that, as a lover of the movie, become like real songs to you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like every time I see it, I'm singing them to myself.
Oh, well, you've seen it more than I have. I'm not a big see a movie a lot of times.
Right.
Although I have had the experience of hating a movie and going back and loving it more than one time.
Do you know, can you remember one like that?
Manhattan.
Oh, wow. Hated it.
Then loved it.
Then loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is one of my all-time favorite movies.
Yeah.
A little problematic now because of the nature of the teenage relationship.
Yeah.
But
right.
I remember seeing it recently and thinking he should have just put her in college. That would have solved the whole problem.
I know.
You know? Yeah. And of course it was a different time, but still the high school relationship it's a bit problematic through today's lens.
Yeah.
But one of the great, great movies.
It is.
And there's just so many subtle jokes in Guffman, too. Every time – it's one of those movies where every time I see it, I pick up on some new little thing in there, whether it's in the band, the orchestra of the musical, the trumpet player who also doubles as the kettle drum guy yeah. while he's playing the trumpet. And I'm sure in local theater you had a lot of that,
yeah.
people doing – you know, wearing multiple hats.
Sure. I thought they were quite good, that musical group. But I guess our orchestra was really good. In my father's summer theater, too.
Right.
You know, it's less obvious, but maybe just to me because I'm not a musician, but it's less mm-hmm. obvious how amateurish they are.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and these characters are just, I think it's easy to see someone doing maybe not a great job at a local community theater and think, why are they wasting their time or what are they doing? But to them, it's their
favorite
life.
Thing in their life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it should be embraced. It's a wonderful thing.
It is.
All right. Well, we finished with a couple of quick segments. One called What Ebert Said.
This movie is a complete disappointment.
I always like to go and see what Roger Ebert thought of these movies.
Uh-huh.
He gave this 3 out of 4 stars. Not bad. And he says, the movie doesn't bludgeon us with gags. It proceeds with a certain comic relentlessness from setup to payoff, and its deliberation is part of the fun. Attention is paid not simply to funny characters and punchlines, but to small nudges at human nature. Some of the laughs are so subtle, you almost miss them.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that kind of nailed it.
Yeah, I think so, too.
It can be broad at certain times. But there's so many just funny, subtle moments in there. You have to kind of pay attention, and I love that kind of movie.
Yeah, I do too.
And then we finish with 5 questions.
All right.
With Brooke Adams. Do you remember the first movie you saw in the theater?
Yes, The Ten Commandments.
Oh, well, of course.
I-86th Street. I think it was the RKO Cinema or, I don't know, 86th and Lexington.
And
I was about 7.
And do you remember what you thought of it? I'm sure it was larger than life.
That was a
big movie.
Really all that I thought was, wow, that was huge, and I didn't really get it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a kid's movie.
No.
I love that you went to it anyway, though. Do you know what your first R-rated movie was that you saw?
Tony told me this, and I never came up with one.
You can just make one up.
Well, I remember seeing Butterfield 8, but they didn't have R ratings back then.
But that would have been
probably, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. I thought it was pretty risque.
Right.
But I was very young.
Right. Will you walk out of a bad movie?
No.
That's right.
Rarely. I mean, I've done it with Tony because he's like dragging me. We even did it with some friends out of a screening. Now, that for me was like absolutely a no-no.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Like an industry screening?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, it was. And they were so, you know, hated the movie so much. I was sort of enjoying it.
What movie was that?
Emma.
Oh, sure. The Gwyneth Paltrow
yeah.
Emma?
Uh-huh. Yeah. they hated it, and we left, and I was just, I mean, I was like probably apologizing as I was going. It's just not something I can do comfortably. Anything that I right. think people will get hurt by. Or,
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. That's because people, you know, they put everything they've got into these
projects. Oh, my gosh, projects. When you realize how long it takes to make a movie, yeah. How much it costs, how much love, and oh, it's just, it's too much.
It's like the least you can do is sit there for 2 hours. And
exactly.
Right.
Although I saw a movie recently by myself that was pretty unbearable, I have to say, but maybe I shouldn't say what it was. Well, I guess I should, because that's what we're doing here, right?
Yeah, why not?
The new Woody Allen one,
Wonder Wheel. I haven't seen that one yet. Not very good?
Not very good.
Well, no. When you make a movie a year, you can be hit or miss.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He was the best filmmaker at one point, but...
Yeah.
As a director, he seems to have gotten a little lazy with...
I think that's a lot, though. A movie every year?
Oh, it is. It's undoable.
Yeah, it's kind of a crazy thing to try to do.
It is.
Do you have guilty pleasure movies? Tony didn't have any.
He didn't, but, you know, I have movies like Private Benjamin.
Oh, sure.
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Uh-huh.
These are movies that if somebody said you want to go see, I would want to go see. It's not like I do go out a lot to see mm-hmm. old movies that I remember loving.
Right.
But they would, those kind of movies, Audrey Hepburn in anything, I would.
Of course. Yeah. And boy, Eileen Brennan, who was in The Sting that we just talked about with Tony and in Private Benjamin, she was so great. She was such an underrated actor, I think.
Yeah.
And then finally, Movie Going 101, what is your movie going ritual? Where do you like to sit?
Well, you heard Tony say I like sitting in the front. I like sitting in the middle, and he considers that too far.
So you disagree on what middle, front, and back means?
Yes.
Okay.
I think you want to sit in the middle of from front to back and from side to side.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, you don't want to sit behind somebody who's very tall.
Right.
And I always have to have popcorn. I mean, a movie without popcorn is just, I won't even bother to go.
Butter? Salt?
No butter. No butter. Salt, but only the amount they put on, which is often too much. But
right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's wonderful. Thank you, Brooke.
Thank you, Chuck.
This is great.
I hope so.
Thanks for letting me hammer you with Days of Heaven questions.
Sure. My pleasure.
I couldn't help myself. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. That is Waiting for Guffman in the can. I knew someone was going to pick it sooner or later. And I thought it was great that that's what Brooke chose. It's always fun to kind of guess what people might be into. And, for reasons you don't know, because you don't know this person, you never know what they're going to pick. And it turns out that Brooke picked Waiting for Guffman because of her childhood growing up and her father being a director of community theater here in New York City. So it was really kind of cool. Love the story about her waking up in her bedroom to auditions happening because that's where the piano was. It was really neat, her and her sister. So it was a lot of fun to talk about that with Brooke, and she was very sweet to let me barrage her with questions about Days of Heaven. If you haven't seen Days of Heaven, boy, do yourself a favor and get it today. One of the great, great movies of all time. So thanks to Brooke Adams. Thanks to CDM Studios. And until next time, why don't you start your own community theater for a change? You're lazy. Do it. Edited, engineered, and scored by Noel Brown from our podcast studio at Pond City Market, Atlanta, Georgia.